Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Movie Digest. I am JQ.
And I'm Finn.
And it's top five opening scenes. So, obviously, opening scenes, very important in films. Sets the tone for the film we're about to watch. And sometimes it's its own little story in itself. So, let's dive straight in.
We had to have a discussion about this before we started. Because both of us came into this thinking that each one would choose Saving Private Ryan.
Yep.
And both of us were potentially going to. But the problem with Saving Private Ryan is the one that everybody thinks is the opening scene isn't actually the opening scene.
No.
So the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan is the old man and his family walking across the
cemetery,
the cemetery of the soldiers.
Yep.
Which then fades to black and goes into the second scene.
Yep.
Which is amazing. But not an opening scene. No. Thus disqualifying it from all future talk in this section. Would you want to go first?
I don't mind if I do. So number five for me is Casino Royale.
That's good.
Black and white.
Yeah. I didn't actually even think of that one. That's a great choice. So good.
Bond, well, any part of the Bond film that explores the origin story of how he got his 00 status.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, he kills someone in the bathroom and then shoots the... Is he calling himself a narc or something?
I haven't seen it for a while.
M thinks I'm bent. Then he's mistaken.
I think that's it. It comes across as he's a government official of some level and he's been... selling secrets or something, so that's why Bond's got to kill him.
Yeah. But in the books, he's in New York and he assassinates someone, shoots someone through a window, and then does another killing, which I can't remember what it was. But so it's black and white, gritty, very grainy scene.
Yeah.
And also explains, so not only explains Bond's origin for getting 00, but it also explains the gun barrel sequence, because it's the guy getting up with the gun and he spins around and shoots him. Which I thought was genius.
It's brilliant. It's so well done. I think as well, just that whole scene plays out like a really old-fashioned noir film, which I think is a really nice reference to the actual time that the original Bond films were filmed at.
Yeah.
Which is like height of the Cold War, you know, like kind of 50s type espionage. And I just love that. And also the dialogue, the way that the shadows work and stuff.
Completely different style to any Bond film that's been filmed before.
It's phenomenal. And probably the smartest thing they could have done, because then from that point you're like, we're going in a completely different direction here.
Yeah,
it will be nothing like you've ever seen before. And I still think Casino Royale ranks up there as one of the greatest Bond films, purely for that.
And on a caveat to that, I rewatched Skyfall the other day.
Oh, it's a great film.
Such a great film. But the first 2 seconds of the film, he slides into the corridor and he just goes duh, duh. You know, the Bond theme, just two notes, and just everything from all of the previous films just comes racing straight back with those two notes.
Yeah.
Very impressive. So moving on to number four, I've got The Matrix.
Cool, first crossover. We were trying so hard to avoid it as well.
Obviously, awesome.
Phenomenal.
Again, I think we were talking last week about, the week before, about one of the last films that had a truly groundbreaking new style of filming.
Yeah.
Before Gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. One of my favourite things is when you go into a film watching it, knowing that it's meant to be good, but you know nothing about it.
Yeah.
And if by the end of the opening scene you're just like, what? that you're compelled to keep watching, whether you think it's good or not. I think that's a sign of a great film. And I remember a lot of my friends in high school had said, oh, you need to see The Matrix, you need to see The Matrix.
Yeah.
So I watched it, and the whole of that, I was just like, I can't gauge what's going on, because I don't know what's happening. Like, what are these characters doing? Yeah. Why are the guys in suits chasing this person in latex? Oh, they're probably going to be the bad guy, the person in latex. And then it all transpires. And it's just glorious right up until the end of that scene, which is where Trinity manages to escape through the phone box as Agent Smith's plowing the van into her.
And at the time, you're like, how did she get out of that?
Exactly.
She didn't know about the whole...
It's incredible. And you don't actually find out how she does that until way later on in the movie. But just even the dialogue there, everything is suspicious. You don't trust any of the characters.
And
it was the last line between Agent Smith and one of the other agents where she's like, she got out. He's like, oh, it doesn't matter. We know the name of their next target. Yes. Proceed as usual. Revis. It's that whole opening scene is just incredible. Just incredible.
Amazing film. Number three. This is a bit of a toss-up for me. I wasn't sure to go for the first one, the second one or the third one.
Okay.
So I went with the second one, Dark Knight.
Cool. I'm glad. I love that film so much, but yeah. I left it off just because I'm like, well, I was talking about Batman, blah, blah, blah. But that is just phenomenal. That whole opening sequence with the starting on top of the buildings and they're robbing the bank and each successive person gets picked off. And
he screened it 6 months before the rest of the film started.
I actually read something on this just the other day. They did, but then they had to go re-back and shoot it because they filmed it on IMAX cameras and they were still getting used to it. So they had to go back and reshoot the whole of the first sequence again because the footage was slightly soft, I think it was. But just the... And I one of the great cinema reveals, I think, as well, is like, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stranger.
Yeah.
And then the music that comes on underneath that. Also, to have a character like William Fichtner, like an amazing American character, who's only in that as the bank manager. I was like, that just shows you the gravitas of like how important that scene is to everything. So I love that scene.
Awesome film as well. Number two for me, Up.
That's another crossover.
Yeah, but I think it's going
to
be in there.
That one has to be on there. I think genuinely of definitely of any animated film, but it's got to be up there for any film ever. Just, it's the only time I think I've ever cried in the cinema before like the opening sequence is actually finished.
It's unbelievable. It's like, oh, this is all nice. Oh, they're getting, no, they're starting to go, she can't have children. Oh,
yeah.
That's a shame. Oh, she's got cancer. Oh, she died. Oh, what? This is just 3 minutes into the film. Just unbelievable.
What I love about that is the fact that you don't know his wife's character at all.
But
because the montage is so beautifully played out, you genuinely get a sense of how perfect they were for each other and how much this man just doted on his wife and how good she was for him and how good he was for her.
Nice to have that in real life. I love my wife.
Disclaimer. But yeah, I totally agree. I think it's absolutely fabulous.
I think that was Pixar at its peak.
Yeah.
They haven't been as good since, I don't think.
I think that's the last time as well where it's been a film that's come out where you weren't really sure what to expect. Because I think the one before that was WALL-E.
Yeah.
Which again was another film that was so artistically just so brilliant and down a direction that not many people thought they'd go.
Yeah.
And Up was the same. But then everything that's followed up seems to have been slightly more formulaic, or it's a sequel or something like that. So, yeah, get it together, Disney.
Now, my number one, you may not agree with after what I said for number five, but for me, GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, yeah.
GoldenEye.
When he
runs along the... Because this was the first Bond film that had been for 15 years or something.
I don't think it was quite that late. So it was 19... Yeah, it was about 12, because the last... I think Dalton was 87 maybe?
Yeah.
Living Daylights. And then 95, I think, so was GoldenEye.
It was a good long time. It was the longest pause there's ever been. But then you just see him running along the dam and then he just jumps off. And you're like, you don't see stunts like that done anymore. And then the whole thing about meeting 006?
Trevelyan.
Trevelyan. And then going into the dam and all the classic Bond. It's like filmed like a nice classic Bond thing.
Yeah.
And also, for me, the tying with the N64 game, GoldenEye,
where
you actually got to play that scene on a computer game.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
I think it's one of those things where like it's not surprising that you've got two Bond openings in your top five. Because
25 Bonds, 23 Bonds, is it?
There's 22 so far. I think they're making Bond 23 at the moment. But you could pretty much pick any of them. I mean, there's some great ones. It's Spy Who Loved Me, the one where he's in the ski lodge and he jumps off the
mountain
and the parachute. Yeah. And it's the Union Jack.
Yeah.
For anybody who's not seen the Alan Partridge episode where he describes the entire opening to The Spy Who Loved Me, search it on YouTube because it's hilarious. And someone's actually done a mashup where they show Alan Partridge talking about it and the actual opening title going hand in hand. But he like does all the stuff where he tries to sing and tell you what's happening at the same time. So he's going like, nobody does it better. It's like, as a woman on a luger, you know, she swings around. What was that? Too late. You didn't see it. It's so funny. But yeah, but there's so many great ones. I think even as well, the first time I ever watched a DVD, which in a room where someone had surround sound, was my best friend from high school, and he'd spent like a stupid amount of money on a TV and a surround sound system, and he was like, come over, I want to show you something really exciting. So I came over to his house, and he put on the start of Tomorrow Never Dies, and it's the one where he's in the it's like an airfield in Russia or something like that, and there's he jumps in the plane and the plane's like you know, blowing up the whole of the naval base. But seeing that in surround sound is just like,
the first thing I ever had on my surround sound system was the scene from The Matrix where they walk into the building with all the guns in the bags.
Oh, the government,
and they
obviously
just drop the, and then the bass kicks in. That's probably my favorite thing I've ever seen in the cinema, was that, just because the sound was so good.
So good.
So good. Anyway, on to your top five.
Well, it's a very good top five. We do have two crossovers, but I'll try. I mean, we've got a whole list of other ones that we can go through very quickly at the end. Great movie openings that should be on. But my number five is Magnolia, Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Is that the one where they're talking about the guy falling out the building and getting shot on the way down?
Yeah. So it's all, because the whole premise of Magnolia, this is not to spoil it, but it's basically, it's like 3 hours long, but there's a cast of about 15 main characters. So it's not like there's a lead or two leads, and then
it's like 15 short stories about Springfield,
basically. And they're all kind of intertwined in some way. So the whole opening scene is about how nothing's ever just a coincidence, nothing's by accident, and it's got this whole thing about, you know, like the guy who wants to commit suicide, he jumps off a roof, but just so happens that he gets shot by his own parent with a shotgun through the window at the exact moment he's passing through, and he would have landed on a net anyway and survived. So then they're done for homicide when he was going to kill himself. It's an incredible and quite I mean, it just straight from the off, it's so full on, because I think there's one about one of the characters
is
just
Tom Cruise
is in it. So
respect the
beep. He plays a character who basically tells men how to pick up women through fairly devious, immoral ways.
Think on you.
But he but there's a thing in the opening sequence where a guy's basically listening to his tape, picks up a girl, and it goes from there. It's an incredible film. If you've never seen any of Paul Thomas Anderson's films, they're all worth checking out, apart from The Master, which is fairly crap. But Magnolia is an astonishing piece of filmmaking.
I've only seen it once, a long time ago, so I might have to rewatch it.
It's really good, really good. Number four for me was The Matrix. We've gone over
that's
that
both
today.
Number four, isn't it?
Yep. Which is just, it's incredible. It's so good. I think as well, not to spend too much more time on it, but the thing about The Matrix is, looking back on it now, how much it still stands up. I mean, there's certain elements of it where you're like, the phones look really dated or whatever. But the fact is, they're in the year 1999, so it's very much a period piece now.
It's like why Back to the Future works, because it's set in 1985. It's all about 1985.
Exactly, which is perfect. But it just, every single thing, the more you go back and watch The Matrix, the more you see how intricately the script has been written. And how perfect, like, there's absolutely no fat on that story at all. Everything that's in there is in there for a reason, and it's been thought out meticulously, and just, I love it. I absolutely love it. Number three for me was Up, which we've already been over. But my top two, so number two for me is Blade.
Blade?
Blade.
What happens in the start of Blade?
Blade is where there's a guy and a girl go to what looks like a very exclusive underground nightclub. And once they go downstairs, it looks like it's your kind of run-of-the-mill, kind of like 90s rave, a little bit, you know, there's a lot of leather and latex and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden there's the boo-ba-do-boo-ba-do-boo-ba-do-boo dance song that comes on. And then it starts with a bloodbath, and blood comes flowing out of the sprinklers above the room. And this guy realizes all too late that he's been taken to basically a vampire rave.
Yeah.
So they're all trying to just basically gang up to eat him and stuff like that. To her, this is foreplay, this vampire woman. And then all of a sudden, there comes Blade out of nowhere and starts taking names. And it is just so cool.
I can vaguely remember that. I haven't seen it for a long time.
Another amazing film from the late 90s that is worth checking.
Yep.
But number one for me, and this is, for me, one of the most seminal opening sequences of a film, because as soon as you mention it, everybody can hear the song in their head. They can see different bits of it. Yep. So for me, the greatest movie opening is Trainspotting.
Ah, I thought you were going to say Raiders.
Raiders is amazing. But no, Trainspotting, because as soon as you hear it, you hear boom, bam,
bam, National bam, Pride bam, going bam, in there as well.
That's not just the reason it's in there. But the whole opening monologue, I think, as well, because it's so ingrained on the, you know, choose life, choose a job, choose a career. And they're, you know, steamboating up and down Princess Street. And it's just phenomenal. And I think one of the greatest scenes of any British film ever made.
It's been quite a while since I've seen it. I have to rewatch it since my visit to Edinburgh.
The interesting thing about Trainspotting is that aside from the shots where they're running down Princess Street, Renton and... Oh, no, it's...
Who's Sick Boy?
No, I don't think... It's not Sick Boy. Spud.
Spud.
Renton and Spud are running down the street. And... Oh, they are with Sick Boy, but he peels off. That's the only shot that's filmed in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Because all the rest of it was filmed in Glasgow.
Hey, Glasgow.
Glasgow. Because it was cheaper to film there.
Of course.
So
that's why Brad Pitt was there.
The bit where he shoots in the dog... In the park from the bushes, that's a park in Glasgow. Yeah. The pub scene, that's one in Maryhill, which is now closed.
Who's going to buy me a drink?
That's it. And,
almost.
the football pitch from the opening sequence as well, I've played on. That's near Partick Thistle Stadium in Maryhill as well.
Partick Thistle. I remember you listening to that name when I was listening to the sports results on a Saturday afternoon.
There are certain... this is a complete...
Partick
Thistle 3. This is a complete tangent, but there's certain ones as well where I've... I wouldn't know where certain places are, but because I've heard them on the football results. Yeah. I know. So like, because in Scotland, the two biggest teams are Rangers and Celtic. In England, there was a team called Stalybridge Celtic and a team called Stafford Rangers. So I get Stafford, I know, is somewhere near Manchester, but I've got no idea where Stalybridge is. But you kind of assimilate this weird knowledge. Yeah. There was one time where I was getting the Megabus back up to Scotland and passed through somewhere... I can't remember the name of the place, but I was like, how do I know that name? It was like a really obscure name. Oh, yeah. I used to, when I played Championship Manager, I used to pick the teams with the weirdest and funniest names to play in friendlies.
Yeah.
And that was one of the teams that I chose. And it was like, oh, like 10 years later, I'm actually traveling through this place.
I think my favourite was Caledonian Thistle.
Inverness Caledonian Thistle. Yeah. Yep.
There you go. And back to movies.
Back to movies. I think there are so many amazing scenes that we haven't talked about at all. So apart from that, we talked about Saving Private Ryan at top, which we had to leave off, but it's interesting, there was no Tarantino on there for either of us, and Tarantino is a man who knows his way around opening scenes.
Yeah, I mean, they're good, but they're not like action-packed and like, whoa, this is amazing. They're great, like the opening scene for Inglourious Basterds is great, but it's a thriller kind of, it's all talky-talky, not shooting someone in the face or jumping off a dam, you know, it's not quite as exciting. Or picking up the idol, which we both have picked up.
We have, Raiders of the Lost Ark is an amazing, amazing opening sequence. There are some other ones on there as well where the one that I remember, and the film's terrible, but have you ever seen the film Swordfish? John Travolta and Hugh Jackman.
I have, but I can't remember the opening scene.
The opening scene is literally the only good thing. If you turn Swordfish off after the first 4 minutes, that's the best thing about the movie. But it's like this amazing... It's like, from what I remember, it's like a heist situation. But it's the people... So there's like a SWAT team. There's like the goodies, the baddies, and someone else.
Yeah.
In these four buildings at like a cross-section of a road. And it keeps flying out the glass of one across the road and into the other.
I vaguely
and it keeps
it.
Going around in this massive circle around the block. Almost kind of like, you know, the Kylie music video where she keeps walking around
in different ads.
Yeah. It's kind of like that. But it was that was amazing. But terrible film. But other ones that I had on my list were The Godfather, I think, has got an amazing opening scene there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm enough. It kind of feels. The Lion King, I think, is a phenomenal opening. There's quite a few other Spielbergs, so we've already talked about Raiders of the Lost Ark. Jaws is amazing.
Yeah.
And also Jurassic Park as well. Shooter! I just think is amazing. But one that I think gets left off so much is actually the first X-Men film. Because the opening of X-Men is the realization that Magneto has his powers. who is a young Jewish kid being dragged through the gates of Auschwitz, powerful, I think it is. And you see he's got the branded tattoo on his wrist and he's screaming because he's being separated from his parents and it's bending the gates of Auschwitz, I think it is, he's going through. Which I think is a phenomenally powerful gesture, and it's just a shame the rest of the film kind of goes a bit downhill after that.
I had a couple of honourable mentions for opening scenes, which were ambitious, but the rest of the film wasn't that great. Remember Snake Eyes?
Cage film.
Nicolas Cage. It had a 12 and a half minute opening scene, all shot on a Steadicam in one take, but it was before cameras could film 12 and a half minutes, so there was a few hidden edits in there. So as an opening scene, it was quite... It was really well done, walking through sort of Madison Square Garden or wherever it was before a massive boxing fight. And like near the end of it, he just walks out into the stadium full of people, which works quite well. And also A Touch of Evil, Orson Welles film.
I've seen that.
That's all filmed in one take. Like it just goes through a sort of town and ends up at a border gate or something like that. Again, it's not that great, but ambitious in its intent in one shot.
I think as well, one film that deserves... a mention here for opening scenes, even though technically it's not an opening scene, is Star Wars, because it's so distinct as an opening with the text coming down.
You mean as in the credits?
So the opening scene is the whole story done, and I just think that's really cool, and it always does the same you know, where it pulls off to something in space, and then the actual opening scene of A New Hope, where there's that gargantuan spaceship that just passes overhead and seems to go on forever and ever. I just think that's amazing.
And that nicely segues us on to movie news.
Movie news.
Edit here. Because there is the new title for Star Wars, Episode 7.
The Force Awakens.
So many jokes are going to be made about that name. So many jokes.
What's your reaction to it as a title?
Well, the Force wasn't asleep, surely.
Yeah. I've got to say, it makes me automatically, I think anybody who's watched the films and is a fan of the franchise will jump ahead.
Yeah.
And it probably gives away more than it needs to. I think the best thing to do is something that either sounds epic or something that sounds mysterious. And although we don't consider it that special now because of what the film was, The Phantom Menace is a great title, and because it literally, you didn't have any grounding for it whatsoever.
Yeah.
But with this, The Force Awakens, it's a bit like The Dark Knight Rises. You know, it's just like, it just feels a bit like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's strange. Yeah. Is it Dark Force though?
Well, I don't know. Well, that's, again, this is the stuff that it just makes people jump ahead to, because I was listening to another podcast the other week, and they were talking about this as well. So, but they were saying the same kind of things I was already thinking, where I was like, well, Yoda himself says there's always two Sith, a master and an apprentice.
Yeah.
And at the end of Return, there are none.
Yeah.
So that's an imbalance in the Force, because Anakin's prophecy was that he was going to bring balance to the Force. So I don't know.
Who knows? Could Palpatine be back?
I doubt it.
Or he, because in Revenge of the Sith, he's talking about how to cheat death, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So because the Emperor just gets thrown over the edge and you don't see what happens to him. You just see a big bright light.
Yeah.
So he could come back.
I don't know. I think that would be a bit lazy, to be honest.
Yeah, it would be a bit.
And
yeah.
I just think it's such an enormous universe. And we already know we're going to have, which I've not got a problem with at all, it's going to be great. We've already got a lot of the old cast coming back.
Yep.
But this should be a benchmark for a brand new universe. There's so much else to explore in the Star Wars universe. So don't just keep retreading the Vader and the old stuff. I mean, that stuff's amazing, but that's been done. There's six movies on it, three of which are terrible. So just let's move on.
So they wrapped principal photography last week.
Mm.
So hopefully we see a trailer next 6 months or so, maybe.
Well, is it next Christmas it comes out?
Something like that in 2016. We really should know.
I thought it was like kind of Christmas 2015 it was going to be out. Because they've been working on it for about 2 years now.
Yeah, it depends on how long it takes them to edit it.
True.
It'd be a new year editing it. About 10 years.
Yeah, 2025.
Oh, dear. Some other news. Toy Story 4 has been announced.
Yeah, I've got to say, I was, as soon as I saw the headline, I was a bit sceptical. Because I think Toy Story 3... had such a brilliant end point, not to give any spoilers away, but it was such a beautiful conclusion to the trilogy. And while I don't love it as much as the first two,
yeah,
it's still an excellent film. It's really brilliantly done. And
have you seen any of these shorts that they've made since the end?
No, I've seen a few of the really annoying Sky adverts that they've done, but
the shorts are quite good. Okay. There's one which is a bit rubbish, Toy Story of Terror, it's called.
Okay.
There's one called Partysaurus Rex.
Okay.
There's Hawaiian Vacation, which is all about Ken, which is great because he's a really good character in three. So depends what they're going to do, really.
What actually filled me with hope about it was the fact that, because I read into it a little bit, so the guy who's going to direct it is John Lasseter.
Yes.
Who directed the first two.
Yeah.
And has since basically gone on to be the head of kind of Disney animations. It's so everything Pixar and everything that are old style animations as well. So I think that's good. But also it was to hear his enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Because he said they would never have made Toy Story 4 if he didn't think it was a great thing. I know you hear this all the time from studios. But what he said was the idea that the two guys who wrote the story for Toy Story 4 was so good that he was like, not only am I green lighting this, I want to direct it as well.
Okay.
So I think that's quite a good sign that he's...
Yeah.
Really into it. The weird thing is that it kind of made me think of, I don't know if you've ever seen one of the Robot Chicken sketches. Do you know Robot Chicken?
Yeah, I usually watch most of the Star Wars ones of theirs.
Yeah, so they did...
back
in the day, they did a thing about potential idea for Toy Story 4, and it's called Toy Story 4 Spring Break. It's where it will wreck any innocence that you have associated with the Toy Story thing. So basically, Andy brings back a girl.
Yeah.
And
that's all you need to say.
Well, yeah. They go into the bedroom and they can't see what's happening on the bed.
Yeah.
So Etch-a-Sketch is on the bedside table and they're like, Etch, what's happening up there? And he draws it and it's pixelated out. And they'll just go, whoa! And Rex throws up and then like a condom gets thrown down onto the floor and it's gross, but amazing. It's so funny. But I don't think that would be the story that they go down. But again, I still think there's a lot of a good universe there that they can explore. There's so many great ideas.
Yeah.
I did see this other great thing the other week, which was these two brothers in the States they spent 2 years making a shot-for-shot live-action remake of Toy Story. And it's brilliant. So like they got the younger brother to play Andy.
Yeah.
And they've kind of half-mixed in stuff that they've recorded themselves. So like anything that's Andy or his mum is their stuff.
Yeah.
But so that they get all the musical cues done and the right voices and stuff.
Yeah.
They've used all that side of the things. But the inventiveness of, because it's shot for shot. So like some of the shots you think, how are they going to do this?
Yeah.
So you know when the green military men are going downstairs to do their reconnaissance mission. And there's a shot where one of the soldiers jumps off and it's an aerial shot of him falling down and his parachute opens.
Yeah.
They managed to get all of that. It's like, it's absolutely ingenious. And it's not like with hybrid equipment. It's all like a family camcorder.
Nice.
It's totally, just type in real life Toy Story and it'll come up in YouTube. It is so worth watching.
Sounds good.
It's really good.
What news have you got us?
Well, I think the other biggest thing that's happened over the last couple of weeks, and this is going to go, I feel like I'm going to be a bit moany about this, but It started off by seeing the new trailer for Age of Ultron, The Avengers Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. What was your take on it?
I thought it looks good. Didn't really give much away. Too many sort of, oh look, Captain America's shield's broken in half. It's the undestroyable material. What could have done that, I wonder? No idea.
I agree with you. I think, well, actually more so, I just think there is becoming such a standard and a formula, particularly for the Marvel films, which is actually becoming quite boring.
Yeah.
So although this is meant to be this brand new evil that's even bigger than whatever it was that was attacking in the first Avengers, the Battle of New York.
Yeah.
I'm just not... I think the thing is as well, it's getting to the stage now where we're getting outside of real popular culture. Like we're going into parts of the universe where people have no idea what these are. So
Guardians of the Galaxy.
But that was the only one caveat I'd say, because Guardians of the Galaxy, I went into knowing nothing and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
In fact, as far as to say, I think it's the best film Marvel have made. Yeah. It's my favourite one.
I haven't seen it yet.
That I've seen, I absolutely loved it. And that was all characters that I didn't know who they were. But with this, I'm like, I don't know who Ultron is. And he just basically looks like a more advanced version of Iron Man.
I think it might have been made by Tony Stark. I'm not sure.
But then it's showing like the start of... you know, Hulk's fighting Iron Man at one point and Captain America. And so I don't know. I'm just... It's led onto a whole other thing. So around about the same time as this trailer's come out, both Marvel and DC have been in a huge spate of listing all the films that they're going to do.
Yes.
So 2015, next year, we have Avengers Age of Ultron coming out.
Yeah.
We're also scheduled to have Ant-Man and the Fantastic Four reboot.
Yeah, not too keen on Fantastic Four.
2016, reboot. We've got Deadpool, Batman versus Superman, Captain America 3, X-Men Apocalypse, Doctor Strange, Suicide Squad, and Sinister Six. 2017, we've got Wolverine 3, an unknown Marvel film in May, Wonder Woman, Fantastic Four 2, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and another unknown Marvel movie in November, Justice League, a female-led Spider-Man spin-off, Venom : Carnage, Lego Batman. Moving into 2018, we've got The Flash, two more unknown Marvel movies, an unknown X-Men movie, the Aquaman movie, another Marvel unknown movie in November, Amazing Spider-Man 3. Then 2019, you've got Shazam, another unknown Marvel movie, Justice League 2. And in 2020, you've got Cyborg and the Green Lantern reboot. And that's not including Thor 3, X-Force, Gambit, Sandman, Justice League Dark, Spider-Man, an untitled Superman movie and an untitled Batman movie. Some of those in there will be the Avengers 3 and 4, which are split over two movies.
That's at least 4 days of my life taken up by watching films.
I just think it's too many.
Yeah.
And I think if you're listening to the podcast, you know that I'm a massive DC fan. But more particular than that, it's really just Batman. Like, I absolutely love Batman. And I really like Superman as well. But I just think they're the two best characters in comic book history. Loads of people will disagree with that, but that's just the way that I feel. But to the point where, like, I totally enjoy, like, Spider-Man movies and stuff like that. Yeah. But when I was growing up, like, they were more an event thing. Like, you'd maybe get a superhero movie every 2 years.
Yeah.
So you'd have Spider-Man, X-Men, Batman. That was kind of it. Yeah. Like, there weren't really that many other ones that came out. But this, it's just getting into silly season. And I'm like, most of them I don't care about to start with. And most of them will be exactly the same kind of things happening.
Yeah.
I've got to say, as much as I enjoyed the Avengers, I found all of the individual Thor, Iron Man, Captain America movies, I think, are dreadful. I mean, the first one I really liked. But I tried watching Captain America 2 over the weekend, and I put it off. Yeah. I was so bored by it. I didn't care about any of the characters. It was literally...
So did you hail Hydra?
I don't know what that means.
You didn't get that far?
No.
Okay.
I don't. And also as well, they were making this huge deal about a character called Bucky Barnes. Yes.
Yeah.
I literally didn't remember him from the first film.
He was his main mate.
Well, apparently, but it was so ineffectual, the whole thing. I'm not interested in it.
Well, you know what's going to turn that frown upside down?
What's that?
Did you see the trailer? Grumpy Cat the movie.
No.
God.
Please tell me this is a joke.
No, there's an actual Grumpy Cat movie. Wow. And the Grumpy Cat is voiced by a woman.
Okay.
Which just sounds weird. Yeah, I'll put the trailer up on the page and you can check it out.
But Bart Simpson's voiced by a woman, so I've got no problem.
There's not a woman pretending to be a man cat, because Grumpy Cat looks like a bloke.
I don't really? Yeah. Is Grumpy Cat actually male or female, though?
I don't know.
So
it could be my fault then. What about Terminator Genisys?
Genisys. Again, I'm... it just seems so cynical that they're making all these films. So you know that the rights are reverting back to James Cameron in 2019.
Oh, God, right.
So literally, I think it's... Is it Sony that own the rights? They've scheduled 3 Terminator films. To be done by 2019 before the rights revert back.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
there's so much of the story that hasn't been told.
Do you know what the premise is of the new one, Genisys, is, though?
It's a reboot, really, and there's an old Terminator looking after Sarah Connor.
Which is Arnie.
Yeah.
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 So they've literally written another movie just so they can get Arnie in again.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, well, that's, fine, whatever, but that's...
Especially to be Terminator 2 again.
It's just sullying everything that was great about the first two films.
Yeah.
And every progressive movie gets worse, and I don't think this one's going to be any better. Is there anything in this that makes you think it will be better than T1 or T2?
Nope.
So what's the point of doing it?
Money.
It's just so cynical. I'm in such a bad mood today.
Well, hopefully this list will cheer you up. You know, we were talking last week about the My Little Pony film.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, you were talking about the My Little Pony
film. I was talking about it. Total Film has come up with a list of the 10 My Little Pony movies we want to see and who would direct them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give you all 10, so I'll just give you a few notes. I was chuckling with laughter at this one.
Okay.
So obviously we start with My Little Pony Begins, as directed by Christopher Nolan.
Uh-huh.
So you imagine what goes on in that one. My Little Pony, The IMAX Experience, directed by James Cameron.
Yeah.
The Human Pony.
That sounds horrible.
Exactly, I'm not going to go any further with that. Die, Little Pony, directed by Quentin Tarantino.
That I would want to see, that would be amazing.
Me, My Little Pony, and I, directed by the Farrelly Brothers.
That could be hit or miss, that one. Yeah.
But my favourite, number one, was Total Pony, directed by Guy Ritchie. Sweetie Belle, Pinkie Pie, Applejack, Spike, Snips and Spitfire. The ponies of Ponyland already sounded like a bunch of East End geezers, so there's no reason why the sickly sweet American voices couldn't be roughed up a bit in a British remake. Danny Dyer, Ray Winston and Dexter Fletcher would make great horses, getting their cutie marks inked in, hanging out at a track and singing, "Friendship is fucking magic."
That would be amazing.
Oh, that made me chuckle. Hopefully that cheered you up a little bit.
Do you want me to come along so you get a bit more rainbow power? Oh shit, rainbows. Nah, that would be amazing. We were, just before we started recording, we were watching an episode of Comic Book Men, the show in the States, which is centered around the comic book store that Kevin Smith and his friends run in New Jersey, and they went to the My Little Pony Brony convention.
Yeah,
I've got to say, like, I'm a fairly liberal guy. I'm like, whatever floats your boat, go for it. I was quite disturbed watching a lot of that stuff. It was odd. And because it's brony, so bronies is a term particularly for
men,
guys
who
like My Little Pony, who are mostly people that I don't want to bring a court case, might potentially be in a sex offenders register at some point, probably live alone, probably play computer games quite a lot. I'm guessing that's the kind of vibe, because that was allegedly what a lot of them looked like. But I think that looks weird.
So neither of us has been to the cinema.
Oh no, I have.
I have. You?
I've seen tons.
Oh god, right. Wake me up when you're finished.
Well, which ones have you seen?
Well, the only two I saw were Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yes.
Groundhog Day with guns.
Yeah. I think it's slightly underselling it that way, but it's amazing. I rewatched it again recently as well, because one of my really good mates hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
And I said, it's definitely one of the best modern sci-fi films I've seen.
It's pretty good.
I, both in terms of how good the science is in it.
Yeah.
Or how interesting the science is, and how good the action is.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Bill Paxton was great in it.
Yeah.
Is that Bill Paxton? Really? He was really good. Even though
the whole cast are brilliant. I think even the J-Squad, you know, they're really good. And one of the characters in J-Squad, I can't remember his name, the kind of like bigger guy who doesn't wear his trousers when he goes into battle.
Yeah.
He's been in so many British comedies as like these tiny little characters.
Now you said that, yeah.
So he's in an episode of Spaced as the paper boy.
Right.
And he offers Daisy what she thinks is an ecstasy, but it's actually a mint. And she's like, go on then. I'll have a half. He's in Black Books, an episode of Black Books where Bernard gets locked out the shop and he has to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
And it's him serving him. And then later on he goes to like a McDonald's type chicken shop and it's the same guy serving him. So he's obviously got all these student jobs. He's in an episode of Extras. He's the guy in the very first episode that picks out the dog hair with his fingers.
Right.
Where he says, they're at the canteen, the food place outside, you know, where you go to get your food when you're on set.
I've been in that canteen.
And Ricky Gervais' character gets his thing and he just goes to the guy who's serving him, who's this guy from Edge of Tomorrow. Your heart's not in this, is it? But one of your pubes is, I see. And the guy looks at it and he goes, nah, it's all right, it's the dog hair. He's like, it's all right, everybody. It's a dog hair. And if you do find one, he'll just reach in with his big sausage-sized fingers and pull it out for you.
I like to go on record and say the food in Pinewood Studios is actually very nice.
I've never had it in Pinewood Studios. I've had it on set in a few other places, and it's generally pretty good, actually. Yeah.
You've got to keep the crew happy.
Oh, you have to keep the crew happy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The other film I watched was A Million Ways to Die in the West.
I just watched that recently as well.
Very good.
Well,
I really liked it.
It was funny enough. We watched it on like a Sunday night or something like that. Mm. So like you just want to watch absolute fluff.
Yeah.
Nothing serious. And for that, there's just the right amount of like kind of like dick and fart jokes in there. That it was quite funny. It wasn't anywhere near as good as Ted, I thought.
Different. Yeah. But there's this, when they were sort of riding around in the desert, I was thinking, wouldn't it be great just if you saw the DeLorean going past in the background being pulled by horses? And then there's a cameo by Christopher Lloyd at the end. I watched that bit twice because it was so good.
It would be a crime for him not to have that scene in there. It was really good. The rest of the support cast I thought were quite funny. Like you've got Sarah Silverman, I thought was hilarious.
Yep.
And Gianni Ribisi, who's just, he always freaks me out no matter what character he plays.
Yeah.
He was the odd guy in Ted as well.
Yeah.
He was Phoebe's brother in Friends. But Gianni Ribisi always plays odd characters.
Yeah.
He's slightly unsettling. One film that I actually failed to mention last time, which was top of my list, but I think I was so angry about Turtles I didn't fail to mention it, was I was lucky enough to get tickets while London Film Festival was on to the surprise screening.
Yeah.
Which is usually a film that will be coming out probably kind of Oscar time, so another couple of months.
Yeah.
So we were really lucky that it was Birdman.
Yes. Now, I saw the trailer for this ages ago and I thought, that looks really interesting.
It is really interesting.
Is it? It
is amazing. I've never seen a film done quite like this. And it was interesting, you were talking earlier on about two films that have opening sequences or like big shots, which are massive, big tracking shots. So it's basically all one big long shot. This entire film is one shot.
What?
Well, it's filmed like that. So there's edit points, obviously.
Yeah.
But it is one continuous steady cam shot that moves around the whole time inside and outside the building of this playhouse.
Wow.
It is astonishing. The actual basic premise of the story is it stars Michael Keaton, who's see if you can see the parallels here, who plays an actor who 20 years ago was in a very famous superhero franchise called Birdman, who is trying to revive his career by being serious and respected in the theatre.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes around him trying to put on this play, getting good actors and stuff. It's just astonishing. There are so many different things going on the whole time. So there's the very obvious story about ego and fame and what is art and how do you get accreditation for your work and all this kind of things. But there are great things in that as well to do with like family and stuff. So Emma Stone plays his daughter, who's also there because she's his PA. His ex-wife turns up for the opening night, and Ed Norton as well. I mean, the whole film is brilliant, but then you throw Ed Norton into this and he is just amazing in this. It's so funny, so off the wall, just completely bonkers. But the way that his character brings out both the best and worst of all the other people around about him is phenomenal. It's just, it really is an astonishing film that has to be seen. And unlike anything I've ever seen, it's directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. He's an amazing Spanish director. So it's definitely worth checking out once it comes out.
Look forward to that.
I've seen another couple of really good films, and it's good getting to this stage of the year because you always get like the big ones coming out for kind of Oscar season. So I also got to see Fury recently, the Brad Pitt war film.
How is that?
I absolutely loved it. It's weird reading the reviews afterwards from other people because it seems to be quite a hit and miss. Like some people thinking it's a bit dark or it's not very well done or the acting isn't good. I was mesmerized the whole way through. So far as to say, I think this is the best war film that's been made since Private Ryan.
Yeah.
So that's 15 odd years since a film I think's been as good as this. It's it looks incredible. The cinematography is just stunning. There's got some amazing set pieces, but the thing that made it best for me was the acting of the kind of core group of guys that are in it. Brad Pitt, I thought, was excellent. He plays War Daddy. He's like the kind of head of this tank. It's got Shia LaBeouf, who usually, I think, he's quite enigmatic. You never know if he's going to be good or not, or if he's going to chew up the scenery and just be a bit odd. I thought he was incredible in this film. Really, really good. And also Logan Lerman, who was a main character in another film that I loved from a few years ago called The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yeah.
And he plays this kind of squaddy. He's having like the worst day ever, worst first day ever. The set piece is in it. The tension between the main characters is so fraught. Like, there's one particular scene where they've just claimed a town and they end up eating in a kind of like half bombed out front room of two girls that are living in this town. And I don't want to give too much away, but just the way that's acted and portrayed, it is so tense. And you see the psychological horrors of everything these guys are going through, how it affects them in that scene, to the point where you're thinking, will they ever be able to go back to normal life after this? And it's an astonishing piece. When it builds to the climax as well, it's just phenomenal. Absolutely brilliant. I also went to see Nightcrawler.
The trailer looks very interesting.
It was good. I did enjoy it. I found it a little bit hard to connect with.
Yeah.
But I think it's because of the character in the story. So the story's about, it follows this guy called Lou Bloom, who's played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who kind of inadvertently stumbles into becoming a freelance cameraman who films crime scenes around LA. It's got a really good cast. So there's Bill Paxton's in this as well, and Renée Russo, who's the wife of the guy who wrote it, Dan Gilroy. But I don't want to give too much away, but it's clear from the very beginning his character is a complete sociopath. Just doesn't like people, doesn't know how to interact with people. And because of that, his character is very much an anti-hero. He's still the protagonist, but he's the anti-hero of the story. So it's actually quite difficult to relate to his character in the complete lack of empathy and the way that he uses his cunning to make situations for his advantage with no real... there's just no real warmth about the film at all, which is kind of par for the course because of what he's trying to portray. So I'd recommend it. It's really good. Jake Gyllenhaal's performance is fantastic, but I think some people will feel that it'll leave them a bit cold coming out of it. There's no real... redemption at all in the whole of the film. I mean, for the viewer, in what happens. So, but it's good nonetheless. It's worth seeing. Just two other films that I saw recently, really quickly. One was Pride. It's a film about...
That's the prequel to Pride and Prejudice.
slightly different. Pride is about the group of gay and lesbian people in London in the 1980s who, it's a true story, who find like it's kind of weird solidarity in supporting the miners who were striking in Wales in the 1980s. The reason it's the Welsh miners are the only people who will take the money that they've raised because nobody wants to be associated with the gays and the lesbians in the 1980s. And it's good. It's very British. So it's like just this side of rinky dink. it could be construed as being a bit twee or a bit cheesy in places, but it's got enough about it, enough heart. And the thing is, it's based on a true story, so a lot of this did actually happen. But it's very much, you know, we wheel out all the big time. So Imelda Staunton, Bill Nye's in it, and they're all, you know, putting on their best kind of Ponty Pandy accents when they're in here.
Fireman Sam.
It's very good, and same kind of thing as like people have said it's in the same kind of vein as like Full Monty or something like that. It's a very British film, you know, lots of use of the word bollocks and arse and stuff like that in there. It's good. It's worth checking out. One of the last ones I saw recently was The Maze Runner, which is kind of the latest in the long line of a lot of these teen fiction books that are being made into films like The Hunger Games and Divergent, stuff like that. But this one I'd say is the best one I've seen of all of those because I'm not a massive fan of The Hunger Games and stuff.
Very 80s it felt like when I watched that one.
Yeah, it was... I think for me, I just can't get out of my head that it's basically the premise of Battle Royale.
Exactly.
But done really badly. So I just can't get that out of my head, so I just don't really enjoy it. But Maze Runner is really good.
Yeah.
It's got kind of like a half American, half British cast. So there's some really good young British actors in here as well. You've got Will Poulter, who was in We Are the Millers.
Not seen that.
It's in Son of Rambo as well.
Haven't seen that.
I haven't seen it. Kea Scodelario, who people might know from Skins. She's the kind of younger girl from Skins. And also the little boy who played Liam Neeson's son in Love Actually, who still looks about eight, despite that being about 11 years ago, that film. But it's really good, and it starts off, it's like a kind of like Lord of the Flies type thing. These boys all arrive on an island. One keeps appearing every month, and it follows the latest guy. They're surrounded by a giant maze, and they're told they have to figure out how to get out of the maze in order to escape. And then not everything is as it seems. There are these weird creatures that live in the maze that if you're stuck in the maze overnight, they'll attack you.
Right.
So you have to be out there before the maze closes, and it moves around all the time and stuff. It's quite interesting. There's some good bits in there. But I wouldn't say of any of the films that I've mentioned earlier, Ron, in the podcast, they're all probably more worth your time than that one is.
Failing that, Die Hard.
I always watch Die Hard. Yep. It's always good.
So that's it for this episode. I've been JQ.
I've been Finn.
I will see you next time when it's top five. Dun dun dun. I haven't worked it out yet.
I was like, that was going to be a surprise for me, isn't it?
See you later.
Bye.